You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. Be sure to check out Plus Membership at newchurches.com for weekly exclusive content, downloadables, and in the past couple of months, we've sent books each month to all of our Plus members as a gift, as a thanks for being a part of it. My name is Daniel M, and I'm here together with the silent Ed Stetzer, who actually did not interrupt me. You kept your word, Ed.
You know how hard that was? I'm never doing it again. I am a new man. I am. I have been born again when it comes to podcasting.
And now, so, does anyone interrupt you on your other podcast?
No, it's just a thing we started early on. So here's what we need to do next time. You should send me the script, and I'll do the welcome script, and then you can interrupt me, and that'll be a little bit fun.
Yes, we shall do that on episode 160.
I like it.
Cool. Well, we will start off with a question from Gisley.
Hi, my name is Gisley Borges. I'm a pastor here in the Netherlands. We've just started a church here a couple of months ago. And these podcasts have really been a blessing for me in my life. Every time I go outside or I go to the groceries, I always listen to these podcasts. And I got a small question for you guys. And the question is, when do you start with small groups? I got a good system that I think will work for our church. But the question is, when do you start? When are there too few people to start? When do you say, no, there's not enough people? When do you say, okay, now is really the time to start doing small groups? Thank you, guys. God bless you.
All right. So what's neat here, Gisley, I mean, he is from the Netherlands, and, you know, we can see all our stats in terms of who downloads the podcast. And we're at over a quarter of a million people have downloaded the podcast now. And Netherlands, I mean, I don't know how many we have actually individuals who are listening from there, but there's about 250 downloads from that country. Outside of the US and Canada, it's Australia, the UK, South Africa, Germany, and then Japan, actually. Believe it or not, Japan has way more downloads than South Korea.
We're like David Hasselhoff. We're really big in like Europe. Do you know who that is? David Hasselhoff. Yeah, he's really
I think Baywatch is coming out actually with another.
Okay, I wasn't referring to Baywatch. I was saying David Hasselhoff. You didn't even know this. David Hasselhoff is a musician who's really big in Europe. You didn't even know. All you know is from a godless show that you shouldn't be watching, young man.
So. This is fun. But I was amazed that Japan has more listeners than South Korea. Mexico and Kenya have more than Brazil. This is fascinating.
Brazil, anyway. This disappoints me. My Brazil friend, Torabin. Yeah. Why not, my friends?
Well, Gisley asked a question about small groups, and he has a good system that'll work for his church. And what are your thoughts on all that, Ed? I mean, you wrote a book called Transformational Groups, right?
Yeah, with Eric Geiger. Yep, for sure.
Yeah.
I think the twofold. First, his question was when to start small groups. And so, I mean, when you're church planning in Europe, I mean, a lot of your churches small groups. I mean, it's a lot of the churches are smaller. I'll actually be there in Germany at the Evangelical Free Church. Everyone's welcome. It's coming up in May. And you can find it at go to edstetzer.com, go to my speaking page if you want to come. We're going to do 3 days on church planning, not just me,
awesome.
Several speakers. But the thing is that I'm kind of the view. Now, there are philosophy differences here, but I'm kind of the view that you start your church from small groups. You don't start a church and then have small groups.
Yeah.
So in other words, typically I would have a home Bible study on Tuesday night. I'd have a home Bible study on Thursday night. Then eventually I might have one on Wednesday night if I'm full-time church planner. You know, that might be less common in Belgium. And then at some point, I'd bring them together and we'd actually have a church. So that's sort of the process as I tend to see it, rather than let's start having Sunday morning services and then when do we start small groups. So again, here part of the reason is this, is that when you join these two things together, like groups and church life, from the beginning, it's better off in the long run. When you instead, you sort of say, here's the church and we're going to have small groups, well, then you're having to you have to install these values that aren't already there. I want you to have those values before you start worship. And I want you to, I mean, I know it's cliche, but you're not a church with small groups. You're a church of small groups from the very beginning.
So when you think about small groups and church planting, Ed, what are your thoughts actually on the whole difference between small groups and cell groups? Because in North America, we don't really hear the term cell group much, but it's still widely used. I mean, you think of countries, especially in Asia as well, that are there. I mean, Korea foremost, but I mean, there's a lot of other countries that still really talk about the idea of cell groups. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that there's much difference between the two in some functional applications. I mean, mm-hmm. Americans don't use the word cell because it sounds a little bit weird. You know, is there a sleeper cell? Is this a, you know, is this a terrorist cell? Whatever. So that's just not a word we use in our language as much in English. And so typically, you know, people call them life groups or something that describes what they do rather than use a word that describes what they are, cells of a larger organism. And I think it's better to describe what they do. Life groups, cell groups are okay too, but that's actually what I prefer.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you look at the whole spectrum of churches that are a little bit more relational and others that are leaning more on the attractional side, and obviously it's not a dichotomy where it's attractional or relational or attractional or missional. But the beauty of starting with the small groups is you're really creating that environment for relationships to develop, for trust to grow, for leaders to be developed. Just the key thing, Jisley, here is when you start small groups, part of it is you don't want to be the leader and have everyone see you as the pastor, right? You want to be quickly raising up other leaders and even having another leader there, and you're helping them out maybe for the first few weeks, but you're consistently planting new small groups and raising up new leaders so that it's not all relying on you.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good way to put it. So I think groups are it's hard to use terms like mandatory. You know, is this a mark of a biblical church? No. But if you have a church that's going to grow beyond 7,500 people, I mean, you can't do the functions of church life in the large group gathering, bear one of those burdens, you know, the 30 commands, the one another commands in the New Testament. So I think it almost rises to the level of a biblical, at least it's the Western larger group expression of a biblical value that I think ultimately we need to have.
And part of Jisley's question was, when are there too few people to start? And if you look back to Edward T. Hall and when he talked about the whole theory of proxemics, and it's kind of resurfaced in the last few years again, people talking about a lot. You look at their four spaces that individuals connect in. You have the public space, which is your worship gathering. You have a social space, which is 20 to 50 people in an environment. You have that personal space, which is that 8 to 12 people, that small group environment. And then you have the intimate space of 1 to 3 people. Now, the reason those four spaces are important is because humans naturally interact differently in each of those environments. As a result, if you think about a small group dynamic of 8 to 12 people, people are going to naturally interact differently in that environment of 12 people versus if you had 3 people, right? So when you look at what end you want to achieve, you know, you're looking at or what values you want to celebrate or help develop, you look at the public space. I mean, celebration, vision casting, this large momentum. I mean, that's a great value to cultivate in that public gathering. In a social space of 20 to 50 people, that's where you can actually get a lot of missional movement there. It's kind of large enough to, I've heard one pastor say it's large enough to dare, but small enough to care. So you have enough people that you can get things done. You can serve your neighborhood. You can really do some damage in that sense. But then when you look at an 8 to 12 person group, you can get into each other's lives and develop community at a much deeper level than you can in a group of 20 to 50 and also in a group of 100 plus. But then you look at the 1 to 3 people, that's where you get a high level of accountability. It's just natural to want to open up and for trust to quickly develop. So where I've seen small groups fail is when they try to celebrate values that naturally don't work in that environment, right? So small groups that try to do everything, Now, it's not impossible, but it's just there's a lot more work that needs to get into it, a lot more. It can feel it sometimes unnatural because you're forcing something that isn't naturally going to happen.
Yeah, and I think natural is cultural. So, I mean, mm-hmm. So we do recognize that these are cultural things. And I think some of our house church people are probably yelling at their whatever podcast player saying, well, you could just stay in homes and multiply instead of expanding. I get all that.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the typical, normal, I don't know what term you're going to use, traditional,
yeah,
whatever.
That's a good caveat.
But the reality is that the fact that we have allowed churches to grow larger, and for many of us, that's a goal. I'm unapologetic about wanting to grow a church. That in doing so, these additional problems arise. And so, but we address them, and actually we can address them at a pretty strong level. Statistically, people do indicate that they get very connected. Matter of fact, larger churches that have small group ministries, particularly aggressive small group ministries, are actually more effective than smaller churches at getting people into community because they have processes and systems to get there. So because of that, I think it ultimately matters that we wisely discern how best to how best to kind of implement these things. So it's funny because this is my DMin dissertation before I wrote my PhD. I actually focused on, small groups as a key place to implement some of the vision in the life of the church. I think it's essential. I think, I don't remember where I first heard it, but, there's at least 30 commands you can't do in the New Testament if you're not actively connected to a local church. I've heard that from lots of people over the years, and I think that's true. But I think that it's not the whole story. The whole story is, or at least more of the story, is that there are at least 30 things you can't do even if you go to a local church, but you're not in a small group. You can't bear one another's burdens sitting in a room with 400 other people. You can't provoke one another to love and good deeds, except the exception of the pastor, sitting in a room of 400 people or 200 people or 100 people.
Yeah.
So the essential nature of small groups is just key. So back to his question. I mean, for me, if I were in his shoes, I would early on seek to build in the DNA that we have a Sunday morning, probably Sunday, in his case, I don't know where he's meeting or what he's doing. But let's say we have a weekend gathering. And we have a small group that meets on Tuesday night, small group meets on Thursday night. And I would start with the Tuesday night and Thursday night and then bring them together with the excitement that now this is the church. The church is a gathering of small groups.
Good stuff. Well, thanks again for listening in to the New Churches podcast. Be sure to submit a question at newchurches.com, or if you're on your mobile device, go to speakpipe.com/newchurches. And we'd love to hear from you. We will catch you next time.